Welcome to Whistleblower Network News. I am your host, Jane Turner, FBI whistleblower and advocate. It is our honor to share with you these experiences of real-life heroes and people of integrity. Welcome to Whistleblower of the Week. I am Jane Turner, as you know, advocate for whistleblowers. And today we have somebody that we featured on Whistleblower Network News in July of 21, twice in the newspaper, because her story is so extraordinary. And she is from Canada. And to just give you a real quick overview, she was offered a job as fourth class constable for the Ottawa Police Service. And she did become a constable. And of course, as always, she was a good constable. And then she started getting harassed, like some female law enforcement. She started getting harassed by her fellow officers. She was bullied. And she reported that sexual harassment and bullying to her chief. And retaliation was quick. I'm personally interested in this story because the retaliation I suffered as an FBI whistleblower was a fitness for duty exam. The same thing that happened to Constable Kimberly Cattaray. In my fitness for duty, the FBI sent to the psychiatrist or psychologist that I saw the fact that I must be suffering from delusions of grandeur because of the fact that I said I was at the arrest of Christopher Boyce, a famous spy. And of course, it happened to be in a book, A Flight of the Falcon, which portrayed the story where I was there at the arrest. So it was just blatant lies that the FBI gave to the psychologist, which of course made the psychologist rule that I had a transitory delusion of grandeur, which in itself is an interesting term. But Kimberly Cattaray also suffered this kind of abuse, which I will tell our listeners was very common a few years ago. That is fitness for duty for law enforcement. As I talked to Kimberly, and she will tell you this morning some of the outcome of her story, some of it. Now, of course, federal agencies rely on yanking your security clearance, which is a lot faster than making someone go through fitness for duty. But Kimberly's case is so amazing because the psychologist that she saw said he wasn't there. So welcome, Kimberly, and we're very excited to follow up on this story, which we first reported in Whistleblower Network News in July of 2021. Welcome, and I'm so glad to have you on because your story is so complex, so interesting, and so unbelievable.
Hi, Tell Jane. Us where I just want to thank you for having me.
You bet. I'm just really glad to have you on because your story is so unique. So we already kind of know the essence of your story from the article. You can give us a little Reader's Digest version, which is you reported the harassment, sexual harassment and bullying, and your chief at that time, and you offered to resign, correct? Because it was so awful.
I did.
But
I,
your chief, yes. Tell us.
I actually, because I had went to several of my superiors, starting at my sergeant, and then I was directed by another staff sergeant to go speak to my staff sergeant, my direct staff sergeant, and the inspector, which I did, and then nothing was done. So finally, I actually walked up to the chief's office, and I actually offered to resign. The harassment,
it was so awful, wasn't it?
It was the worst thing I've ever experienced in my life.
They even got into your locker, which caused you great concern because your gun was in there.
Well, that was part of the reason why I had walked up. Some of the harassment that was happening as I was going home, My front door was open. My bedroom had been mingled through. I was going to work. I was being alienated. And and then my locker was open, which is, it was happening on several occasions, which was a big concern for me because my gun's left in there. So we weren't allowed to bring our gun home, but I'm going into work on a regular basis and my locker's open. So I just didn't know what to do. I didn't know anybody from Ottawa. I had moved from 10 hours away, 9-10 hours away. So I was alone up there. And I had left a relationship of an officer who had been on for 20 years. And this is where a lot of the story wasn't covered, because I kept going to him. I was getting messages. He knew my location. He knew what my whereabouts. And I'd come home from going out for lunch with somebody. He'd send me a message. How was lunch with so-and-so? At first, I thought it was a game. I didn't realize how he knew. And I'll be honest with you, Jane, I was really naive. Like I come from a small town. I was raised by my aunt and my grandmother and my dad. Like my dad passed away when I was younger. So I was very naive. Like I didn't realize some of the stuff that happens. Like, so right. All I knew was that I wanted to be a police officer. I wanted to do good. And I thought police did nothing wrong.
Correct. I fully identify with you. Because that's what broke my heart and my spirit was when I was forced to go to it and they were raising all these issues that were totally untrue that they'd been given by FBI officials. That's when I realized I had no hope of recovering my career because they were willing to lie and make up things, which was devastating.
Absolutely.
And you were a good officer. You didn't have any problems.
I didn't have any problems growing up in high school, college, nothing with my parents. In fact, I had been through quite a bit with growing up. And like my mom was very abusive, physically abusive. And so I was involved in the children's aid with that. So everything that I had learned growing up, I always thought, you know what, I'm going to take that and I'm going to turn it to good. Like the cycle stops with me. So I was really proud when I got on the police service because I eventually raised my sister after my dad passed. She moved in with me and we were very opposite, but I was 19. And so everything that I had learned growing up, I was so proud to say that, you know what, it stops with me. I'm going to make a difference. And I'll tell you, my world turned upside down in policing.
Oh, terrible, isn't it? The experience of being sidelined, you know, being cast off from your tribe. It's terrible. But now because you had launched these accusations of bullying, sexual harassment, they were the ones who told you to go to this psychologist, correct? It was kind of a fitness for duty situation. They were going to send you to kind of see if you were fit. Keep
so
going.
Finally, and this was coming through text messages, phone calls and everything. So finally, when I came into work one time, there was a staff sergeant in the locker room and I came into work and my locker is wide open again. And that was finally the straw. Like I just broke down in the locker room and I said, she actually looked around the locker room to make sure nobody was in there. And she says, I don't know why they're doing this to you. And I said, but nobody's listening to me. Nobody's helping me here. So that's when she directed me to go talk to my staff sergeant who brought in the inspector at the time. So I spoke to them. I showed them the text messages where I was told to keep my fucking mouth shut. I showed them like messages of how he knew my whereabouts. Like I was showing that I opened up my phone and I showed them.
The harassment, right.
Yeah.
And the bullying.
I told them about my locker. I told them to go speak to my neighbors. I said, you know, like, here, I'm feeding them all the information. I said, if you don't want to listen to me, that's fine. But do your due diligence. Like, listen, like, right. Because I don't want me to get hurt and I don't want my family to get hurt. And when I say family, I mean my grandmother and my aunt who raised me.
Right.
So they left it there for a bit. And then again, nothing happened. They actually moved me platoons. No investigation. They just moved me platoons.
Sure.
So finally, I just got fed up with it because nobody's going to listen to me. That's when I walked up to the chief's office and I brought my badge.
Yeah, which people normally don't do, correct? Walk into the chief's office.
No, apparently that's very unheard of.
Okay, so you walked in there with your badge, and what happened?
Yeah, I offered to resign. I showed him the messages. I told him what was going on. I said, you know, I went to my sergeant. I went to my staff sergeant. Like, and Jane, again, I'm going to tell you, like, I come from 13 years of working somewhere. Like, I didn't complain. Like, I never got in trouble. Like, so this was all new to me, this harassment, but it was affecting my family, again, my grandmother and aunt, and it was affecting me heavily. Like, I wasn't sleeping. I got to the point, like, I'm like, I didn't even want to leave my locker now because I didn't want to leave my gun and fear coming into work again with my locker open. So I just, like, I'm trying to do the right thing here, right? So I actually offered the chief to resign.
And who brought up this whole idea of fitness for duty?
Well, when I offered to resign, he says, nope. He says, leave it with me, honey. And again, I remind you, I showed him the text messages. I told him who to go talk to. I said, talk to my neighbors, talk to the sergeant the staff sergeant who see my locker open. And this was a regular basis, right? So he says, leave it with me, honey. And the next thing you know, I'm pumping gas on one of my days off and I get a phone call from, I'm not going to use names at this point, Jane, just
appreciate that.
But I get a phone call from one of the ladies and apparently she was a chief assistant. But again, this is not what I've heard. I've learned later on. She wasn't a chief's assistant, but she told me she was a chief's assistant and she wanted me to meet her and another gentleman from HR. And we met them at Lone Star. And at that point, that's when they told me that they were removing my gun from my locker as we speak and that I was being sent to the doctor.
Yep. And that's where the journey started, which we're going to be talking about here. Interesting. You bring allegations of sexual harassment and the chief calls you honey.
Yeah. Leave it with me, honey.
Yeah. Leave it
and
with
sadly,
me, honey.
Jane, those words echo with
me. Oh, because I can understand that. I can understand that. I can understand that fully. So you did go see this gentleman who is a psychologist, correct?
He's a registered psychologist. Apparently, so stuff that I've learned throughout the last few years, he used to work with the RCMP, or I don't know if he still does. I don't know much about him.
Correct.
And apparently him and Vern White, who was the chief at the time, that's no secret because it's in the CBC article. Vern White used to also work with the RCMP. So they had quite a history together. Like they worked together quite a bit. So now I'm being sent to him. I'm not making these appointments.
Right.
They're being scheduled and I'm being told when to go. The appointments are being done on company time. Always at lunch hour, always at the noon hour, because it was in an office. And every time I went to this office, nobody else was in it, just me and the stalker.
Right. And so it looked legitimate.
I wouldn't say it looked legitimate because, first of all, I'm going into an office. The office looked legit.
Right.
But why am I going at noon hour when nobody else is around?
Yeah, and there was some shady things that were happening there, but you did go because you thought that this was part of the process. They had forced you into this corner.
No. I'm gonna backtrack you here a little bit because I went because I had no choice. I was still on probation. I had actually attended my association on a couple of different occasions, and the female representative there told me, I told her, I said, I don't understand why I'm going to a doctor. Like, I fear for my safety here. And I offered to resign. I told her everything. And all she told me was do what I was told.
Right. That's
so
what
there
you're
was
told.
No representation.
Yeah. It's
kind of
like.
I didn't understand that either.
Exactly. You're just kind of shuttled right down. You don't have many options, do you? Yeah.
No.
So this brings back so many memories to me. So you did go and you discovered something very interesting. Tell us how this all blew up.
Well, when I started talking, I talked to him about the harassment. I talked mm-hmm. to him about the relationship with the ex. And it was interesting because, Jane, we were sitting in a little room. Like, I can't even, it was just like a little room when he brought two folding chairs and they faced each other. And he had his laptop on his lap the whole time and he was recording everything.
Ah.
Yeah. So,
Yeah. But then, go ahead.
So finally on the fourth visit, it didn't feel right because he was not interested in the harassment or anything. He was interested in what I knew and what I was complaining about and stuff like that. So finally I confronted his ID. I said to him, I said, like, you look a lot like so-and-so. And his response to me, maybe I am.
So now we're starting to question the actual identity of this doctor you were sent to.
Yeah.
But so tell us what happened, what blew up that the newspaper in Canada reported on and where it's at today, because it just blew up, didn't it?
Yeah. So the newspaper, they actually met with the doctor and the doctor had denied seeing me.
Right. That's the interesting turn. Is the doctor denied seeing you?
Yeah. The doctor denied seeing me. He actually went on national TV and denied seeing me. And even he confronts some of the report and some of the stuff that's in the report, like how he used to come and try to trigger me at work. He says he doesn't even practice that.
Right.
So,
'cause he showed up at your work, right?
Yeah.
He showed up at your work. He was taping you. And then when you started questioning this process, he denied seeing you.
Yeah. And even if you pull my benefits, there's no. So who is paying this guy? So we actually have a Zoom meeting with myself, him, and my lawyer. And the Zoom meeting is quite interesting because he denies it full out again. He says
that he
he's
was
never
there.
Seen me.
Yeah.
And he even says in the Zoom meeting, and I want the public to see this Zoom meeting. It's quite interesting. He says that because we talked about the domestic that I was in and I told him about the text messages. I said I was showing my bosses. Like I said, to this day, I still have those phones. Because I just feel like I kept holding on to hope that at some day somebody was going to do the right thing here. So I held on to everything I could to prove, like, look at the phones that I'm showing you guys with the text messages, him telling me, like, he's telling me my locations. He's telling me to keep my fucking mouth shut, never denying what he's doing, but telling me to keep my fucking mouth shut. So Dr. Frey even says in the Zoom meeting that had there have been anything of harassment or especially domestic related, he would have put that in the report. There's nothing mentioned in the report.
So, but he's denying that he was even there.
Yeah. But now he's saying that he was there and it's his report. In the Zoom meeting, he even says that he doesn't even use the language that's in that report. I offer you a copy of that Zoom meeting, Jane. And if we can publicize it without any legal backlash, because that's what they seem to do, is they always go at me, right? Financially and everything. So if there's any way that we can publicize that, I think the public would be very interested in that Zoom meeting.
Okay, but let's back up just for a minute here, because we might have lost some people at this quick change of he said he wasn't there and now he says he was there. So initially when you started digging into this, when you started having doubts about this psychologist whose name is Dr. Frey, he came out and said, no, that wasn't me. She is wrong. That is not me. So yeah. The newspapers got involved.
No, he wasn't saying that I was wrong. He was actually siding with me. He says, like, that report would be very damaging to anybody. Like, the report's quite damaging. And he actually sided with me and said that, like, he's never seen me.
Right. But he was saying, I've never seen her.
Yep.
I don't know what she's talking about.
Yep.
And then the media up in Canada got a hold of this and publicized it. And then he reversed after the media got involved, correct? And said, yes, that was me that saw her for fitness for duty. And now you must feel like you're just being whipsawed here. I mean, you're first told no. I wasn't your psychologist that saw you for the police department. And then after media attention, he turns around and said, yes, I was the one who saw you. That must have been shocking.
It knocked me down quite hard.
Right.
Because you finally feel like there's a little bit of hope that, you know what, the truth is finally going to come out.
Right.
And then you get hit again. And
so, I'm sorry. So why do you feel, Kimberly, that he denied seeing you initially?
I think he denied seeing me initially. I can't even speak for him. Jane?
Hi, we'll be right back with more of Whistleblower of the Week after a quick message from one of our whistleblower friends. Don't go anywhere.
Hey, this is Austin Handel, also known as Officer Ash on social media and as the Dunwoody Whistleblower and the Vice Chair of the Lamplighter Project. Leading whistleblower attorney Stephen Cohn's latest book, Rules for Whistleblowers, A Handbook for Doing What's Right, is the ultimate guide to blowing the whistle. Rules for Whistleblowers is an easy-to-read, essential tool for anyone curious about whistleblowing. The book lays out 35 rules to help whistleblowers navigate the complex and dangerous world of whistleblowing. Subscribers to the Whistleblower News Network can also receive 35% off a copy of this indispensable resource. Visit whistleblowersblog.org/rules for whistleblowers to learn more.
Did it accuse you of certain things, or say you had a mental disorder, or say everything you were saying was false? What made it a bad report?
It actually didn't even mention any of the domestic. It didn't mention anything, actually. And Dr. Frey himself says that he would have put all that in the report. What it does focus is on my, they tried saying that I was paranoid. I was.
Yeah. That's so typical. You just kind of shake your head because they use it so often.
Yeah. And look at the cases that there's been cases where people have went forward and they try to use the paranoid thing. And then these women end up dead because people fail to investigate and the correct people fail to investigate and the correct people fail to do the right thing. And that was my biggest fear, is I didn't want to end up injured or hurt or have anything happen to my family.
Right,
so when you get a damaging report like that, you're like, it's a silencer for a bit. Like it's a hard hit.
It's an extremely hard hit. And to tell you the truth, the only thing that got me through what happened with me when these false allegations that they used to try to get me out of the FBI was I had a background in forensic psychology. So I knew what they were doing. However, the hit was just as hard. I mean, it just about did me in. It was so cold-blooded, so false. You just can't believe it's happening to you. But now you had the strength, Kimberly. You had the strength to confront this report and confront the situation and say, hey, wait a second. That's when the media kind of got involved, right? And then he flipped and said, okay, I was there.
Well, Jane, I'm going to tell you, and this is a lot of stuff that the media failed to tell the public, and I thank you for the opportunity to, when he wrote that report, and this is the first time I'm publicly saying this, because my lawyers have all this, is I was in the process of becoming a foster parent. And so you have to do all the psychology, all the home, all the everything. And I was actually handed a copy of that 13-page report where they talked to your doctors, my family doctor of 30 years. They had talked to him, and that report was glowing. I've never had, like, the report even says I've never had any family psychological issues, everything. The report was glowing, and that was at the exact same time that that damaging report came out by Dr. Frey.
Oh, that had to be you just had to have been gutted with that situation. So tell us where it's at now, because this is just stunning, because we know that it looks like you were retaliated against. They used fitness for duty to get back at you, to force you out. See, if they'd have let you resign, that would have, you'd have maybe gone to the media and you'd have been outside the agency throwing, you know, the firebombs at them. And so they couldn't control you. But as long as they kept you inside the service, they could manipulate you the way they wanted, which in this case was fitness for duty. Does that pretty much sum it up?
You're bang on, Jane. But the only thing is I likely wouldn't have went to the media when I resigned because I was so naive to what was going on.
Right.
I was just trying to protect myself, and I was just trying to protect my family, and I was just trying to get away from the harassment. But you left me on the service, and I started seeing what was happening more and more, the corruption that was happening behind closed doors. And it just made me stronger. Because I wanted to make change.
Which is, I give you tremendous kudos for your bravery and for continuing this fight, which has probably taken just a huge piece out of your heart, your body, the whole nine yards. We know, whistleblowers know what the price is that you pay. It is just heartbreaking.
Was Dr. Frey says he he destroys all his records after 10 years. When this harassment was happening, I had written to the OPP and asked them to get involved. That's the provincial, because we're municipal. I went to the OPP.
Okay.
They wrote me back. I still have the letter. They wrote me back actually saying they weren't going to get involved. And then I went to the RCMP, the headquarters in Stony Creek at the time, and I told them what was going on, and I asked them for help. And again, I was turned down. So then I wrote three letters to the Attorney General, and I still have those letters because I faxed them. I wanted to make sure that they got them. So I faxed them, and I saved the confirmation that they got them, and I saved the receipt that I paid and everything. And I still have those letters. They're in the lawyer's hands now, but and never once would anybody help me.
No one.
No one, but I still have the letters that I wrote to the Attorney General, the three letters, and I still have the response from OPP. And that was all within the 10-year mark that I was complaining about the harassment and Dr. Frey, and I was begging people to investigate. So to answer your question, they put on a good show for the public, but what happens behind closed doors is very different.
Which allows corruption to flourish.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I am so sorry that this has happened to you. I am glad you're revealing the links that, you know, people will go to in order to silence a whistleblower. And this fitness for duty con has been going on for years in law enforcement. They found it was, it wasn't easy, but it was the fastest way they knew to get rid of whistleblowers. I have experienced it. And so I give you just so much credit for the courage you have shown in exposing it and continuing to fight this fight, because you're not fighting just for yourself. You're fighting for every other whistleblower who blows the whistle against, you know, malfeasance, corruption. And so you get great, great credit for that. Is there any contact information that people can have concerning you, where if they want to contact you or reach out?
I'm on Facebook, Jane. When you say that I'm not just fighting for me, Jane, I want the public to understand, like, I'm not just fighting for me, because you and I both can attest to this. When we've seen what we've gone through for trying mm-hmm. to speak up and what happened, I don't have a family. It's just me, Jane. Mm-hmm. So I've cashed in everything I own. My RSPs, trying to pay for legal fees. Like, I have nothing. But when you see an officer take his life, I would honestly sit back and wonder what he's really gone through, because does he put his family through this? Because there was times where I was so at my low, I was just like, oh my God, like, I don't want my family to go through this either.
Right.
So, but somebody that has kids and a wife and everything, right. they can't afford to lose their house. They can't afford to cash in everything they own to try to pay legal fees, to try to do the right thing. So what do? They take their life in order mm-hmm. not to drag their family into this.
You're right.
And that's what the public really needs to understand. Like, when you're up at this, we're paying our own legal fees, whereas these corporations and this corruption is getting covered. They have their legal fees covered. They have everything covered. So I honestly believe if this harassment and the corruption and stuff was to be straightened out, you wouldn't have as many suicides as you do in first responders, because there's no gray in this. You either stand up and do the right thing and have your whole life turned upside down and destroyed, or how do you protect your family from it? So you take your life so that you're not selling your house, you're not cashing in all your RSPs, you're not, but then now it's just triggered down to like their kids, because now their kids have to grow up without a parent because you guys bullied somebody so bad.
Mm-hmm. So for doing the right thing, for speaking the truth, for speaking the truth.
Yeah,
that's what's startling in all of this. For speaking the truth.
Yep.
Kimberly, we're going to continue to follow your story. This has turned into just an amazing falling down the rabbit hole. And we are going to continue following it because we admire your courage, your dedication to revealing what is going on in that particular police department, the misuse of fitness for duty. And like you said, people can contact you on Facebook. You're under your true name.
Yep.
And if they want to offer help or assistance or advice, whatever. Funds. Yeah. Funds.
Sorry, I just want to thank you for doing what you're doing. I commend you so much.
Thank you, Kimberly. And Whistleblower Network News and Whistleblower of the Week, that's our job, is to highlight these brave, brave souls who, you know, have the courage to stand up and speak truth to power. Thank you, Kimberly. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Jane.
Thank you for listening. And please don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. If you want to read more whistleblower stories, go to www.whistleblowersblog.org. Music by Rachel Kilgore. Editing and booking by Anissa Sheikh and Victoria Thompson. And a special thanks to our sponsors, Whistleblower Network News.
That is just as hard to stand up tall as it was when you were small. The truth is hard to say.